Datwin joins us on Sports Byline. He played in the National Football League for 7 seasons with the Dallas Cowboys after playing his college ball at Texas A&M, where he was an All-American, and he became the first Vietnamese-American to be drafted, play, and be recognized as an All-Pro in the National Football League, and he has been elected to the College Football Hall of Fame. And he has a very interesting personal story as well. His family left South Vietnam during the fall of Saigon at the end of the Vietnam War, and he was born in a refugee center at Fort Chaffee in Arkansas. And he lived most of his childhood in the Gulf Coast town of Rockport, Texas. First question, Dad, is the fact that the assimilation into the American culture and the American way of life, how was that for your family and for you?
Well, I'll tell you, of course, it was a difficult at first. The language barrier was, of course, the biggest struggle, but just being accepted, too, as well. It's just you coming in and you knew, and I could tell you the story when I was young. I was 5 years old, and my mom and dad, when I went to school, they said, hey, make sure you stay with your relatives and your brothers and sisters. We really can't trust anybody because we don't know anybody, and I think that was the hardest part. That was really an eye-opening at 5 years old. You go, hey, I sort of go outside and run around, play recess, you know, kick a soccer ball, whatever it is. But my parents would say, make sure we got to be in a situation where you make sure that you know who you are with and dealing with.
What was it that surprised you most about the American culture?
Well, I think it's just the it's just a place to dream. I think the land of opportunity, and I think that's really what surprised me about America, is that everybody has come here. We all have dreams. You all have want to have a better life for our kids or our family. And as long as you work hard and you have a dream and you stay clean, I think you don't have a chance.
Who was it that kind of eased the way for you in the early days for you and your family?
Well, I think a lot of it's the people that were in Rockport. I would say a family named the Hattenbachs were a big part. There's more, the Castellines. There's a lot of people in the South Coast area, whether it's in shipping industry and shipping business, that really have really accepted us and embraced us and gave us the opportunity to say, hey, as long as you guys work hard, we'll give you an opportunity. Yeah, I might be wrong, and other people would disagree, but I think everybody is appointed a chance to have an opportunity, and I think that's the people that we owe really the chance that we have to live and pretty much put food on the table and clothes on our back.
A lot of people may not be aware of it, but Texas, particularly South Texas, has a large Vietnamese community down there, doesn't it?
Yes, sir. It's big, and a lot of it's because of the shipping industry. That's exactly what we did in Vietnam. When we came to America, a lot of us went up north, a lot of us went to East Coast, West Coast, all around the country. And I can remember we settled in Kalamazoo, Michigan, at one time for about 6 months. And when I was going through the process of getting recruited at Texas A&M, University of Michigan, et cetera, all around the country, I fell in love with Michigan. And for some reason, I asked my dad, why did we leave Michigan? People in Michigan are so good, and they're so, you know, they're so welcoming. Why did we leave Michigan to go to Texas? And he goes, son, our Southeast Asian people, we don't like the cold weather.
You know, that was the next question I was going to ask you. Was that the first time you ever saw snow?
No, I was too young. I didn't know much. I was born in Fort Chaffee, Arkansas, and then we moved to Kalamazoo 6 months earlier. But when I took my recruiting visit to Michigan, and yes, if you were asking the question if I saw snow on my first trip to Michigan, yes, first time I flew a plane, first time I saw snow, the first time I ate lobster. And I was like, man, this is royalty here, man. You got, Lloyd Carr was a defensive coordinator. Gary Moeller was a head coach. Cam Cameron was a quarterback, the recruiting guy that was recruiting me. Jim Herman was the linebacker coach, who now was in the National Football for many years. So all those guys, and you got to see the Fab Five minus Chris Webber, who just left to go to the NBA that previous year.
Dad, when you saw football for the first time, what did you think of it?
I thought it was a crazy sport. No, but you know, it's what I didn't know much about the game. I could remember growing up, and Anthony Carter for the University of Michigan. This is how crazy Michigan, I fell in love with Michigan, too, because Anthony Carter was number one. He was unbelievable wide receiver, and they had that crazy Wolverine helmet. And I love the helmet, but the game of football is just a, you know, it was different because I wasn't really a football player at the beginning. My first sport was soccer. I fell in love with soccer, and then I started playing a little bit of basketball. Asian people, we know we're not that big, so I was a little bit bigger than most people growing up in my small town of Rockport, and I thought it was going to be the next Shaquille O'Neal. God and behold, I made the right decision. But football was something that was very intriguing to me. It was fun. It was challenging. Every day I went out there, and I tried to get better. And the biggest part that really football, when I was introduced to football, was that I had some great coaches that taught me a lot about the game. Certain things about, hey, alignment, assignment, keys, knowing what to anticipate before it happens, knowing the down and distance. So all that was just taught at a young age, which I absorbed and I learned, and it helped me to become the football player I became.
Dat Nguyen is with us. He became the first Vietnamese-American to be drafted, play, and be recognized as an All-Pro in the NFL, and he went to Texas A&M where he was an All-American there as well. The one thing I do know about the Asian culture is it is a general, meaning general as far as its passion culture as well. Was that hard to acclimate yourself to the violence of football?
Yeah, it was different just because the odds were against you. There's not many Asian American that ever played the National Football League and played the position of violent as the position I played as the middle linebacker. So that was a challenging part because the odds were against you. And I think that was the hardest part to let people understand that, hey, it's still the game of football. You still got to tackle. You still got to run. You still got to catch them. And that's what you have to do. So the game hasn't changed over the 60, 70 years that it started, but you know, the perception is that, hey, it's too small. There's not many history about the culture or the ethic or the nationality that has success in national football. So you're investing all this money in this person or this player, your return's not going to be as good. So that was a challenge each and every day when I went out there and I played. And I know, and I was fortunate in the position I am and to have a chance in them because, you know, a lot of people don't know the whole story of how it all happened, how it went down, that I wasn't even supposed to play at Texas A&M when I got a chance to play and had a career started because of an injury to a player that was an All-American in front of me. So there's a lot of stuff that happened, but for me, I'm just fortunate and grateful for the opportunity that I had to play A&M and to recognize not just the Vietnamese community, but my family and the culture that introduced and hopefully broke the barriers for other kids of Vietnamese descent to dream and maybe one day play in the National Football League.
Let me talk about the challenge for you. And I'm just wondering, who was it that mentored you along the way to so you could deal with the challenges? Because you and I both know when you step on the field in the college level or the NFL level, it's all business.
Well, I think the most important thing, I had some great coaches throughout my career. In college, I had Coach Phil Bennett, R.C. Slocum, of course, Mike Hankwitz. You go down the list of guys that really had impacted my life and gave me the opportunity. Mike Clark, a strength and conditioning coach there at Texas A&M when I was there. You go down the list, when I got to the Dallas Cowboys, you know, Dave Campbell was a big part of giving me boosts of confidence, knowing that, hey, you drafted, you're giving you a chance. And he always talk about, hey, Dave Campbell is about 5'4", and he always talk about, hey, I'm 5'4", and coach in the National Football League. You're 5'10 and some change. You can play in the National Football League. So it gave you a little boost of confidence there. But then you got George Edwards, who's an excellent coach, now the defensive coordinator at the Minnesota Vikings. You got also Mike Zimmer, who's now the head coach at the Vikings. They were all guys that were big, really had a big impact in my life to allow me to dream and have me. Yeah, the boost of confidence to play the level, because as we all know, the game of football in the National Football League, it's 15% physical and 85% it's mental. And when you have guys that believe in you and give you the opportunity and have all that trust in you, it makes the job a little bit easier.
We've got about 45 seconds before we have to break, but when do you know, what was the moment, what was the game, what was the play that you knew you could play at this high level?
Well, I think it's always a challenge that I don't think you can, that you know, because one play away from not being in the National Football League. So I think every day, every play, every snap, you have to perform to your highest, and you have to accept perfectionist, and you want to aim for perfectionist. And I think that's why it allowed me to play as long as I did, because every day it wasn't good enough. We had to get better some way, somehow.
Do you think you were blessed by having that type of attitude rather than somebody that maybe was a good player, knew it going in?
Well, I think it helps because of what we went through, my parents went through, and what we experienced coming to America, overcoming all the odds that we had in front of us. That was the challenges that we had daily or yearly that we had when we were growing up. So I think the work ethic my parents instilled in me really had allowed me to know that, hey, control what you can control and dream big.
We're talking with Dat Nguyen. He played in the NFL for 7 seasons with the Cowboys after playing his college ball at Texas A&M, where he was an All-American there. He became the first Vietnamese-American to be drafted, play, and be recognized as an All-Pro in the NFL, and he has been elected to the College Football Hall of Fame. We'll talk about his NFL years and more about his playing career as well. As we continue across the country and around the world, we've got you on America's Sports Talk Show. Dat Nguyen is with us here on Sports Byline USA, All-American at Texas A&M, and also played in the National Football League for 7 seasons as well. How big were you?
The biggest I've been, the biggest I was ever in the National Football League. I was 5'11", 5'11", 7'8", almost 6 foot tall. I was 243 pounds. Coach Parcells made me put weight on, and a lot of weight. He's so used to those 6'3", 6'4", 250-pound linebacker. And then when he took it out with the Cowboys, I had to be in the full 240s at 240 pounds and some change. But that was the biggest I've ever been. But I used to play about 235 or 232, 235 or so.
How did a 5'11 body carry 235 pounds and play in the National Football League in a strategic position like linebacker? There's something wrong with this picture, Dad.
Yeah, it is. It's just a little guy with a – it's just weird because I look at the pictures now. I was like, golly, I remember how much protein shake I used to drink 3 times a day, 150 grams of protein daily, and plus I got to eat because I had to meet weight. I had to get weight at 240 or plus. If not, I was going to get fined for every pound that I did not reach or that was not meet by Coach Parcells. So it was a challenge, but it was fun. You know, it was a mental challenge weekly, and I think that's what really separates, you know, the great coaches to the good coaches, because they don't accept mediocre. And I think Coach Parcells was unbelievable as a coach. I learned more in 4 years that I played with them in football than the 15 years that I played prior to that.
What was the reaction to your teammates at Texas A&M when you walked onto the field for the first time? And then also, what was it like for the other Cowboys when they see this little guy coming out on the field?
I got a funny story. The first time that I got on the field, we were playing LSU. First game, opening day at Kyle Field, there was about 80-plus thousand people screaming and hollering. So that Wednesday before the game, we're running sprints. I was a backup linebacker, and all of a sudden the starter stepped on a sprinkler head. Can't play. So I had to start. They inserted me in, had to start the game. And I remember running out there first time after the opening kickoff, and I looked to the sideline, got the signal, got the play. And all I could remember was, like, Reggie Brown, the linebacker there. He's a senior linebacker. He had a phenomenal game, that Michigan game, by the way, in that bowl game against Alabama, against the Alamo Bowl against Michigan. He grabbed me in the face mask. He goes, "Dad, what the beep, beep, beep did you say?" Man, I was so nervous. I was stuttering. I had a mouthpiece in my mouth. Here's an 18-year-old freshman, redshirt freshman, trying to get, you know, 80,000 people. So I had to dismiss that mouthpiece for the rest of my career because they couldn't understand what I was saying. And plus, on top of that, I have an Asian accent on top of that. So that was my first experience of playing college football in Kyle Field. And then the next story was that I got to the Cowboys. You know, we go through mini camp, right? Rookie mini camp. Mm-hmm. So with the Cowboys, Chan Gailey was the coach. I just got drafted last week. "Hey, you're coming in. We're going to training camp." I was like, "Okay." "Oh, we're going to rookie camp with the veterans." So they have the veterans and the rookies at, so the mini camp. So I show up, and I think I was at Texas A&M, played 4 years, started 50-plus games. I'll be okay adjusting this game, just like I did when I was high school, went to A&M. So halfway through 7-on-7 drill, here's Dave Campbell. You know, it's like, he's like, "Hey, Dad, get out there." And I was like, "What?" He said, "Get out there." So I start out there, you know, in my mind, I was like, I played 51 games at Texas A&M. I started every game. I played a national, you know, at the high-level Big 12 competition. Got there, looked at the sideline, got the signal. Now, you know, your backs always turn against the offense, right?
Right.
So I turn around. I was a kid growing up in Rockport, Texas, went to Texas A&M. All you know is Texas football, and now you look across, there's Troy Aikman. You look behind him, it was Emmitt Smith. I look to my right, it was Michael Irvin. Ron, they snapped the ball. I didn't even move. I was so starstruck. I was like, oh, my Lord. The guy that you look up to, this is the triplets. Are you kidding me? I'm on the same field with these guys. So, yeah, that was my introduction to the National Football League with the Dallas Cowboys.
I might point out to everybody listening around the world, my introduction to Dat Wynn was when he was playing in the Alamo Bowl against the University of Michigan, because I was doing the play-by-play on that game. I had never seen him play before, and my mouth dropped open, and my broadcasting partner said to me, what's happening? I said, I can't believe he made that tackle when he got there. I said, this is a little guy, and he just came out of nowhere and just smashed the guy. So I was impressed from the very beginning about you.
Thank you.
Let me ask you.
You know, that's always the case, is that we're only as good as the guy next to us or the guy in front of us, especially the linebacker position. So I had some great, great big guys up there. Pat Williams, I played, 14 years in the National Football League. Eddie Jasper, who played 10 years for the Philadelphia Eagles and Atlanta Falcons. Then you get Brandon Mitchell, Keith Mitchell, Reggie Brown. So that's some great, great players in front of me. That's why I was able to do what I did in that game.
Well, let me ask you about Bill Parcells. He arrives in 2003. He was critical of the linebackers in the Cowboys roster. And he jokingly, publicly said, if this were the circus, we could fit them all into one of those Volkswagens that 10 clowns climb out of. And while Parcells was himself achieved nothing as a player in both the NFL and college, the next season he would pay you a compliment when he said, he's a football-playing dude. That guy, you could bet he could have played for any of my teams.
Yeah, Coach Parcells and I, at first it was kind of odd, just the difference, because you know the history of what he likes at the linebacker position. This guy is a, you know, I would say not many people that know are brilliant, but he's up there. He's a brilliant man, and he had his philosophy. He was a tough-nosed, two-gap, you know, defensive mindset. Hey, my guys are going to out-physical your guys. We're going to beat you in the fourth quarter, and we're going to dominate you, and we're going to beat your will. And that was his mindset all along, which was an unbelievable mindset. As a football player, that's what you want. And, you know, so for us, it was myself and Dexter Coakley, and we're both 5'10" and some change, and we like to run around people and sometimes between other linemen's leg in order to make a tackle. So it was hard to gain his trust or his respect. I think I didn't earn his respect until, I would tell you, we played the Jets up there in New York right before we played the Giants the following week, because we went to New York in his first year back-to-back. And I remember after beating the Jets, he comes in, he gave me a hug. And that's when he made that comment. And it's still, you know, to this day, him and I still have a great relationship, and I feel like I'm in his little inner circle. You know, Coach Parcells has an inner circle he'll trust in, and I learned so much about the game of football. You're talking about game situation. You're talking about having plays ready that's going to, you know, that might never happen, but if it does happen, guess what? You better be prepared for it. And it's just that he's demanding, and he's a perfectionist, and he wants to be able to control the game of football, which, as we all know, it's hard to do because a lot of things happen, a lot of moving parts. If one thing breaks down, guess what? The execution has failed. So Coach Parcells has taught me a lot about the game and really just about life skills, too, in life. So I owe a big part of my few years of my career with him, and also how I view what I do now in life, in business, is the way he carry himself each and every day, expecting perfection.
That I've always said that every team in a particular part of the country takes on the personality maybe of the city, but they all have an individual personality. And the great teams, you think of the New England Patriots now, You think of the Pittsburgh Steelers in the 70s with those four Super Bowls.
Yeah.
I am here in San Francisco, and one of my best friends was the late Bill Walsh. Eddie DeBartolo is a good friend of mine. They've all created great dynasty type of teams. Tell me a little bit about the Dallas dynasty, why they and what they mean to the area down there. Because most people, if you're not in the state of Texas, you don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, everybody, you don't know Texas. It's it's amazing when you don't really know. You know, I try to use the same saying as it is with Texas A&M. It's like it's outside looking in, you don't understand it. Outside looking in, you don't understand it. Inside looking out, you can't explain it because it's a culture, right?
Right.
It's a culture where, like, the whole city, if the Dallas Cowboys loses a game, like this past year, they only lost three games. And those three games were the worst Monday you would feel in the city. Like, people, it's like people are mourning because they lost, right? It's so crazy, like, how impact for the Dallas Cowboys in your life, in the Dallas Metroplex, and really in the state of Texas. And it's not just Dallas. It's just everywhere where Jerry Jones, I think, has done an unbelievable job of marketing this organization and the franchise, the bringing it back to where it is. At one time when he purchased this team, everybody knows they weren't that good. They were 1-15 his first season, and guess what? They won multiple championships a few years later, and it could have been an unbelievable dynasty with Jim Johnson. But as we all know, it's almost one of those deals where you love him or you hate him. And in the state of Texas and South, there's people who love the Dallas Cowboys, and there's a lot of people all around the country that love the Dallas Cowboys. But it's almost like a cult where if you don't live close or you don't, if you're not in it, you don't understand what we're talking about, because that's all people live for, and that's the game. And Texas, as we all know, too, is a big, big football state, and the Dallas Cowboys are the team. And I love the Houston Texans, but, you know, they're not in the same category as the Dallas Cowboys.
I know that you had a standard for the way you played that was evident over your long career at Texas A&M and also in the National Football League. You officially retired from the NFL on March 3rd, 2006, after a neck injury and knee problems, which hindered your performance. Walking off that field for the last time, was that hard for you?
Well, it was difficult, but I think a lot of people really don't understand, especially in the position that I am, that I wasn't supposed to be there in the first place. I've overcome so many odds just to have a chance that I had and to even accomplish what I accomplished. And I think it's very similar to what we see now with Tony Romo. Everybody's like, well, why are you surprised that Tony Romo left to go to the booth? And then is he going to come back? Is he going to sign with somebody or something? I was like, well, think about this. Tony Romo wasn't supposed to be on the football team. He was a fourth-string quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys when I was in my third or fourth season. And Tony was what? Made the team because Quincy Carter made a bad mistake at training camp. So guess what? So Quincy got released. Vinny Testaverde became the quarterback. Drew Hansen became the backup. And Tony Romo became the third-string quarterback. So that's how Tony's career really has started. So he wasn't supposed to be there. He wasn't supposed to make it. So it's easier for a lot of players that wasn't supposed to be there and made it and to be successful, and it's easy for them to walk away because they know they weren't supposed to be there in the first place.
We only have a couple minutes left, and I know you went back and you went into coaching, particularly at Texas A&M, and one of those that you coached was Von Miller. And I just wonder, did you see a lot of yourself in him, or what did you see?
Oh, no, I was half as good as Von Miller. I wish I was having God gave me a little more talent. But Von Miller was an unbelievable athlete. He's one of those guys. You're talking about circus with Bill Parcells earlier. You're talking about being short or being small and coming out of a car as 10 of our players. Von Miller could be in a circus too, but in a different way. He was so talented. He was so athletic. This guy, I never seen somebody can run full speed and be 6 inches from the ground. That's how amazing this guy is. But I didn't think he was going to become the player he has been here the last few years, especially as fast as he has and being the Super Bowl MVP a couple of years ago. But Von Miller is one of the guys that the ambassador. If you can think of Texas A&M, a face of Texas A&M football in the last decade or two decades, that has to be Von Miller.
We only have a minute left, and I wonder quickly if you can tell me about that memory in your playing career that is etched there forever.
Well, I think there's no place like Kyle Field. I think people, if you haven't been to Kyle Field in College Station, you don't know. It's just a unique place. I think I can still see fourth quarter TV timeout, and now they're doing the war hymn, and then we're playing with song, varsity song, sore varsity horns off, and all of a sudden, all the opposing team and coaches will just sit there with a jaw drop because they can't believe what's going on. The whole stadium is rocking, and we're sawing off the horn. So that's something that's unique, that's always going to be dear to my heart. And I have many opportunities to play at many great venues around the world, not just the country, but the world. Went to Tokyo. We went to Mexico City. We played at Vet Stadium. We played at RFK. But I can tell you, Ron, there's no place like Kyle Field.
Dad, I want to thank you very much. It was an honor for me to do that game. It's a great honor to be able to say congratulations for being elected
thank
to the
you.
College Football Hall of Fame. You are welcomed anytime here. Please come back and visit with me again on Sports Byline.
I will. Thank you very much for having me, Ron.
Dat Nguyen, again, All-American at Texas A&M. Of course, 7 years in the Cowboys organization in the National Football League. And remember, the College Football Hall of Fame is located in Atlanta, and the 2017 induction ceremonies will take place on December 5th in New York City at the 60th National Football Foundation Annual Awards Dinner, and fans can watch the show starting at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN3. We continue with more of You and Sports Byline.